Good afternoon and welcome to Hometown Alaska. I'm your host, Kathleen McCoy. So, the state of Alaska still doesn't have a budget for fiscal year 17, even as we move through week one of a 30-day special legislative session called to solve this problem. It's rocky times here in the far north as beautiful Alaska transitions away from a dominant oil economy to what? That's our topic today. What are the opportunities in a post-oil economy? What ideas are stewing, percolating, incubating out there? Opportunities taking root right now. Another way to put it is, how will we diversify our economy? A new business accelerator is on the job, linking ambitious young entrepreneurs with capital investment and 90 days of mentoring by experts in exchange for 6% of their companies. To learn about the accelerator and its first cohort of entrepreneurs, let me welcome to the program today Lance Ahern. Lance is the managing director for this accelerator, which is called Launch Alaska. So, Lance, welcome.
Thanks, and thanks for having us.
Very happy to have you. We also have Heather Kelly. She's the founder and CEO of Heather's Choice, a company that makes food for adventurers. Heather, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you.
And then we also have Carl France, a CEO for an industrial drone company called Aquilo. Carl, welcome.
Good afternoon.
So these are two of the companies in the cohort, Yes. But there are three more, and we'll talk about them. We're going to, you know, tease you and keep you listening.
But great.
One of the things I want to let folks know is we welcome your calls. I mean, you may be a budding entrepreneur out there. You may have an idea, but you actually don't know. You missed the chance to get into the accelerator this time, so you want to know how to begin. This is a good place to call. We can take those kind of questions. Or maybe you have a question about one of the businesses that are here today that you're just curious about. Maybe you want to give them some feedback on what you'd like to see their business do. So you can call us in Anchorage at 550-8433 or statewide 1-888-353-5752, and you can also email us at hometown@alaskapublic.org. I also like to let people know we have links on the Hometown Alaska web promo, and we have links to the websites that we're going to be talking about. So these new businesses have really some pretty sophisticated websites that tell their story, and we also have a link to Launch Alaska, just a number of things. So if you get interested, you can go to alaskapublic.org, go to Hometown Alaska, and you'll see a list of links. Okay, so Lance, let's get started.
Sure.
I want to sort of begin with sort of the landscape here. Let's start with talking about Launch Alaska.
Sure.
What is it? How did it get started?
So Launch Alaska is a business accelerator. We started basically about 9 months ago. There was a team from the community led by Joe Morrison, who used to run the 49th State Angel Fund at the municipality. Catherine Jernstrom, a number of other people, Kai Holland in the community, who got together and said, you know, we need better support for new startups. And so they applied to the Small Business Administration for some funding to help get started. They were one of the winners of a national competition. And that was about $50,000 seed money just to allow us to basically operate the program.
I saw the picture of the check, of people standing around with this check that's as big as a doghouse.
Yes.
And it said $50,000 on it. And I thought, that's seed money to get started.
Right.
Okay, but it doesn't even cover the cost of the this summer's accelerator. So keep telling, where did you go from there?
And so Launch Alaska kind of has two pieces. It is a nonprofit, and so we take that $50,000 and we use it to operate the program in terms of our space and other needs. But then we've gone out to the investor community, and we've raised $125,000, which we're going to invest into five local companies, $25,000 each.
Okay. Now, these investors provided the money without knowing what the first class was going to be, or was it all happening at the same time? Like the class comes in and the investors look and say, I think so. How does it work?
There was certainly an overlap, but certainly the investors really didn't have any specific direction to us about what we needed to be doing. Mm-hmm. You know, these are all early stage companies. Everybody knows kind of what the profile looks like. Typically, within 3 to 5 years, you know, half of these companies will be gone.
Ouch!
The chance of getting the next Facebook, or, you know, you have to basically invest in hundreds, if not thousands, of companies to kind of get the real big winners. So that's part of the overall ideas that we're over time investing in a portfolio of startups.
Okay. Let me ask this. And if Carl or Heather, if you want to jump in and query Launch Alaska for anything, go ahead. Is 25,000 times five, is that a nice purse? Or was it just what you needed? Or is it typical startup? That's about where you would be if you were going to be an accelerator. You start about there.
So there are a few hundred accelerators in the United States. We're a member of a group called GAN, the Global Accelerator Network. Mm-hmm. And so we have a lot of data from them in terms of what's typical in this industry. Mm-hmm. And so we're kind of right in the sweet spot, at least the sweet spot as it was a year ago, mm-hmm. in terms of a cohort size of five companies, maybe a couple more, $25,000 as a typical first, you know, seed round of funding.
Mm-hmm. Okay. You know, the only other thing I can think of that felt like that was the business competition that we would see every spring, where the winner would get some support and some mentoring. But this is a little farther down the road than that. You have companies that are already up and running.
They're typically further along in one of three ways. Either they've got a team that's been working together for a while, they've done some significant product development, so they're fairly far along in terms of an idea of what they want to do. Or they're in operation, they already have some initial customers and revenue, and now they're looking to figure out what's next.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned the 49th State Angel Fund, which was, I believe Anchorage was the only city in the country that got that funding. Could you give us a little bit of background on that? Because what I'm leading up to is, who knew we had angel investors? I mean, do we, you know, do we have a healthy number of angel investors up here? Right. Let's talk a little bit about that and start with the 49 Angel.
So it was a program that was started by the U.S. Treasury a few years ago. The city applied for the money under the leadership of Alan Johnston and at the time Lucinda Mahoney, who was the previous CFO under the city administration.
Uh-huh.
And so they went out and applied for the money. A total of about $13.4 million, I believe, was provided to the city to invest in companies to create local jobs.
Mm-hmm.
And what happened is the money arrived. A number of pools of local investor money was engaged and matched to some of that money.
To grow it?
Uh-huh. Right. But what happened is a lot of the investors felt like they weren't really seeing the quality of early stage startups that they wanted to see.
So that helped inform Launch Alaska then.
Right. That's really kind of how we fit into the ecosystem. We're there to really help improve the quality of companies that go through our program, come out, and are ready and more investable to the investment community locally.
So let me ask, is that 49th State Angel Fund, am I saying that right? Yes.
Yeah.
Is that money sitting there? Potentially, or some of it sitting there, still
a significant amount of the money is still sitting there,
so that's
ready to be deployed.
The prize, that's the prize for local entrepreneurs, perhaps to position themselves and be persuasive enough to perhaps get some of that funding.
And some of the matching funds has been made available through partners who are focused on early stage investment and some is really targeted at later stage investment companies that are more mature.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's not strictly limited to early stage companies.
Right. And your background, you're an entrepreneur yourself. Could you just tell us a little bit about why this is a good job for you?
Well, in one of the previous downturns, when the oil companies were laying off money, a number of people, my partner and I got together and started the first ISP in the state. We knew of
What's
other,
an ISP?
Internet service
for nerds
provided.
Like, yeah, okay. Yeah, for non-nerds, yeah.
Internet Alaska.
Okay, okay.
And so there were a number of other companies that were started at the same time, also by people who had taken their severance packages from the oil companies.
So the gift that keeps on giving.
Yeah. I mean, it's, you know, you can see some of the parallels that people are coming out, being available into the market with a lot of background in terms of the needs of not just the oil industry, but the support industry.
Right.
And, you know, there's a potential healthy group of entrepreneurs ready, you know, and available to kind of help invest in the next round.
Right. And built-in mentorship. I mean, people who've had whole careers with major companies and know the ins and outs of marketing or technology or that sort of thing.
Yeah. When there's a team of people from BP who worked on the Wellhead of the Future project, and now they're all suddenly available in the community. They know exactly what that customer needs. Mm-hmm. The wellhead of the future needs of BP haven't gone away. Mm-hmm. So there's just a ton of opportunity to invest and work with these folks to build new companies.
Very interesting. Okay. Let me think. What haven't I asked you, Lance, that you think is, you know, sort of fundamental for people to understand Launch Alaska? Let's see. I know on your site, and we do have your website, if we have budding entrepreneurs out there who want to, you've got 40 mentors listed on your site, and it's a pretty depthy bench. How did you get them?
Well, it's one of the interesting twists in all of this. People focus on the money, but what's really important to the startup folks, the founders, are the mentorship. Mm-hmm. And we've gotten that in talking to many other accelerators and other companies where they've said the $25,000 was great, but getting access to those people with that background to help them to build their business and help them refine their business model.
Right.
That's what was really critical in their success.
Right. So that's interesting. I got to see the sort of, I guess you would call them the elevator pitches or something like that.
Right.
They're about a minute, maybe a minute long or so. But what it made me think of is I was down at Stanford and I was in the D school visiting, mm-hmm. and there were all these folks, and their description of how they came up with ideas for companies was they'd just go out into the world and see how people were struggling with something and think of a workaround, you know, think of a solution. So, I mean, I've always thought about that. And I might, when we get to our companies, ask them where they got their idea from. But one company which we haven't even talked about yet, the personal safety jewelry company,
That's
one that struck me that way. People don't feel safe.
Right.
How can we have, maybe not everybody wants to carry a weapon, you know,
and
but they want.
It's kind of interesting because that particular company, they applied to the program, but they weren't so sure they wanted to come here. And part of the recruitment of them was really simple. We have a lot of needs just like that in our community.
Right, parallels.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
And there are a lot of potential investors who would value, you know, what they're bringing into the market. And so we think that we're going to be able to work with them on many different levels.
Right. So we'll talk a little bit more about them in the second half. We don't have a representative from the company here, although I guess they're
going to be here very soon.
In transit because school starts on Monday, right? or the mentorship starts on Monday. I believe you guys are partnering with the boardroom, and is that where the setups will all actually happen?
The program is housed at the boardroom. They're a significant partner of ours. Mm-hmm. Also, the Alaska Small Business Development Corporation is a huge supporter of what we're doing, and in terms of how we're aligned with, you know, the outcomes that they're looking for, it's very similar.
Now, Small Business Development Center, is that state or is that federal?
It is state of Alaska. Okay. One third of their money comes from the SBA, and
one third
comes from the state, and one third, yes.
Okay, so
Small Business Administration.
So federal, state,
and the university system kicks in a third, I believe.
And their existence is really to foster the development of new business.
Exactly.
Okay, with classes, with not necessarily money.
It's workshops. Uh-huh. It is, again, the mentorship aspect, that one-to-one counseling that they offer is probably the most important you know, thing that they bring to the table.
Which I guess, you know, it is experience, right?
Yeah.
It's I've been there, done that, made that mistake already.
Exactly.
Let me tell you how not to make it. I want to sort of bring in our other guests. I'm going to ask Heather. Now, Heather's Choice is your company. You're the CEO. What made you want to apply to this program?
Well, that's a good question. I was actually encouraged last summer to do a pitch at 1 Million Cups, which is another, I guess you would call it, meeting that's held every Wednesday at the boardroom. And simply doing that 6-minute pitch and trying to sandwich all of my business ideas into this very short presentation was a really good exercise. And out of that, I was introduced to really awesome people like Lance and Kai and Catherine and just a ton of folks in the community who are great mentors. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of trickled since then where those folks have continued to show a ton of support for Heather's Choice. They were very big proponents of our Kickstarter we did this winter and have been really fortunate just to stay connected in that community.
So you feel the need for these experienced voices in your life. I mean, you're wanting that guidance.
Yeah, and it's also a lot of encouragement, too. Sometimes running your own business, I don't want to say it's lonely, but sometimes it can feel pretty overwhelming. And it's really nice to put something up on social media and then have the Small Business Development Center promoting it. Mm-hmm. Or the Alaska, the AEDC, Bridget Coleman over there is such a sweetheart, and she promotes everything that I put out there. Mm-hmm. So it feels like you have almost a group of cheerleaders that are here locally.
Mm. Which I guess speaks to the idea of an ecosystem, right? I mean, and it's here, but we haven't exactly moved far enough down the road where we're spinning out sort of ready companies.
Right. The ecosystem we have now is so much more advanced than 20 years ago. So with my second company, I had to go to Silicon Valley to get funding. And it wasn't until I got there that I got local Alaskan investors. Mm. So now having a co-working space, having these entrepreneurship meetup groups, having the not just 49th State Angel Fund and the local venture partner funds, we call them, mm-hmm. but even at UAA, Seawolf Holdings, mm-hmm. there's just a much more developed community around that.
Right, yeah. Right. So we're moving down that road. None too soon,
right.
I would think. I want to ask you, Carl, what brought you into, why did you apply?
Well, I think Lance hit the nail on the head earlier when he said that one of the main advantages of this program to the companies is the mentorship. When you go through that list, I think the way you described it was a deep bench, and that's exactly the impression that I got.
Yes, and we have a link to that on, if you want to know who this deep bench is, I don't have it in front of me, but it's people who've been involved in ventures and business and marketing and technology. I mean, so we do have a link to it. So if you're curious,
and there's basically like two halves to that list. Uh-huh. There's a group of people who have really been involved in building startups over years, uh-huh. and then there's a group of people who are kind of really what we call subject matter experts. They're mm-hmm. accountants or lawyers or social media or engineers, and you know when you put all those pieces together. I mean, it really is a lot of value.
And it's kind of sobering to think how much expertise you do need. I mean, it's say you have a passion for drones, in your case, Carl, you know, but it's not just your passion for drones. There's, you know, all kinds of financials, audience, marketing, things like that might not be in your kit bag, but you really need them. So,
One of the things that's kind of interesting about that whole Fairbanks-Anchorage dichotomy is there's so much expertise and engineering talent in Fairbanks and around the university, and there's so much business expertise in Anchorage, and just creating those opportunities for those two communities to get together, mm-hmm. there's a lot of potential value in future startups.
Synergy and spinoffs. So let's see. I want to make sure that we let folks know that this is Hometown Alaska. We are talking about Launch Alaska, which is a business accelerator, and it has its first cohort that's going to start next week. They get 90 days of intense mentoring. They get $25,000. And in return, they have provided 6% of the ownership of their company to Launch Alaska. Is that right?
Exactly.
Okay. Yep. And so we have guests in the studio, and we're going to hear from these business owners. But we have Lance Ahern. He's the managing director for Launch Alaska. We have Heather Kelly, founder of Heather's Choice, and Carl France, one of the founders, I don't mm-hmm. think you're alone, of Akilo, which is a drone, and you're moving into the industrial drone business. So I think I'd like to turn a little bit to Heather. And first of all, Heather, how old are you?
28.
And you first had this idea when?
I was probably fresh out of college, so 22.
Uh-huh. And where did the idea come from?
Well, I was invited to be a raft guide on the Colorado River, and it was actually a private trip, so I was just captaining a boat. But it was a 25-day trip, and you can imagine that's a lot of food that you need to bring for such a long adventure. And I had just graduated with a degree in evolutionary sports nutrition, and so I was very geeked on what I was eating, and I cared a lot about the quality of food. So for that trip, I ended up dehydrating close to 50 pounds of my own food because I realized there wasn't a lot of great options out there that really fit my health requirements and my food preferences. So I bought my small little home dehydrator and got really busy for 3 weeks packing food. And it kind of started this new hobby for me that soon became more than a hobby.
That's great. I got to just take a tiny minute to tell you a story about my husband climbed Mount Drum, and he was new to climbing, and I was new, and so I packed all this great food, brownies, fried chicken. The people he went with, they all brought dry rice. And, of course, they were very excited about the food that he had, which was all eaten very quickly, and the rest of the trip was cooking up rice because they didn't want to carry the weight, you know. So what I like about it is I don't think I could do the dry rice, but who can carry the brownies and the fried chicken,
right?
If you eat that kind of stuff, which probably you don't. Let's see. So it sounds like you also have had a really extensive and skilled background in the outdoors. So you know what it's like to get to a spot at the end of a long day where you've, you know, and you're hungry, and how much time and energy do you have to put into that meal?
Exactly. And that's where Heather's Choice, the idea, was really born, because I was doing a pack rafting trip up at Denali National Park. And with pack rafting, you have quite a bit of stuff in your bag. You have a boat, and you have a helmet and a dry suit and a PFD and your tent and sleeping bag and sleeping pad. And before you know it, your bag is full. And mm-hmm. then you have to additionally fit however many days worth of food. So mm-hmm. there's not room for the fried chicken and the brownies. You're lucky if you have room for a water bottle. Mm-hmm. And so that was really a light bulb moment for me when I was going to pack for this 3-day trip and everything had to fit into a bear canister. I realized, wow, I need to make sure that I'm dehydrating plenty of calories for these long trips that doesn't require a lot of cooking time.
Mm-hmm. Right. I wanted to name some of the things that I saw on your website. Dark chocolate chili.
Mm-hmm. It's a good one.
Ethiopian dorawat. I'm not sure if I say that right, but it's a kind of stew.
Yeah, it's a North African curry.
So would you have meat, dehydrated meat in there?
Yep, we use quail for that meal. So it's a really thick red curry paste that starts with 2 cups of paprika, so it's spicy. And then we use shredded quail and put it over a white basmati rice. It's awesome.
Sounds good. And of course, I knew, you know, smoked sockeye salmon chowder. I mean, that sounds like, once again, something, it's an icon of Alaska. So
it's our best seller, too.
Is it really?
Mm-hmm.
I'm curious. I actually need to throw out our phone numbers in case folks want to give us a call. In Anchorage, it's 550-8433. Statewide, 1-888-353-5752. Or we can also take an email at hometown@alaskapublic.org. But back to you, Heather. I wanted to ask the nutritional side of things, because you said your degree was in evolutionary nutrition.
Yep.
Could you kind of relate evolutionary nutrition to your business? Like, what have you used from that background that you took into your business?
Sure. So when I graduated, I actually went back to school at the Institute for the Psychology of Eating to get a professional certification and started my first business, Open Nutrition. So I spent the last 5 years working with mostly athletes on an individual level and also teaching seminars, educating people about the benefits of a whole foods nutrition plan. And of the hundreds of people I've worked with, everybody has felt better removing gluten, soy, and dairy from their nutrition plan. And I've yet to have a client that says, you know what, Heather, I just feel so much better with those foods in my diet.
Please put soy in.
Yeah, exactly. More GMOs. And that's been a real guiding light for me with the business, is saying, okay, I can make really healthy, delicious food that is gluten, soy, and dairy free, but then also ties in these really healthy, humanely harvested proteins like wild-caught sockeye salmon, 100% grass-fed bison, and humanely harvested venison, antelope, and quail. And so that's been really nice to kind of have that as a focus for me when I'm developing recipes, is saying, okay, it needs to be high-quality ingredients. It needs to be nutritionally balanced, so a good amount of carbs, protein, and fat in every meal. And it needs to be super lightweight and pack a ton of calories. Mm-hmm. So that's been easy to kind of have that criteria for each and every product.
Could you talk a little bit about your Kickstarter? Because I bet that's something early, you know, new businesses maybe use to get some cash. What was your motivation? Why did you do it? How did it go?
In November, we decided to launch our first Kickstarter, and we had a pretty ambitious goal. We needed to raise $48,000 in order to buy Bags.
Bags.
So, yeah. Yeah. If you want
to put
talk
the food in?
Yep, exactly. Okay. So if you want to talk about startup expenses, I had no idea I wanted to buy $50,000 worth of packaging when I first started this thing. But in all reality, if we wanted to order pre-printed bags, our minimum quantity was 5,000 per product. And we have 18 products.
Oh, wow.
So to get 75,000 bags was no small feat. And so we decided to launch a Kickstarter in order to recruit our customers and the outdoor community to help us raise this money. And over the course of 5 weeks, we successfully raised $54,000. And like I mentioned earlier, the folks at the boardroom, everybody from 1 Million Cups, everybody in Anchorage was
everybody who's ever known you.
Yeah, so helpful in helping us reach that goal. Because like I say, it was an ambitious Kickstarter goal.
Uh-huh. Wow. And Carl, we're going to pull you in here soon, but I just want to ask Heather one more question. You're the face of Heather's Choice, but is there a team behind you, or do you pull people in when you need them? Or you said it's lonely sometimes being having your own business. So,
well, that's the other reason why Launch Alaska is so great, is because every single person in that group has been asking me who's on your team.
Oh, okay.
And they've been really helpful in just pushing me to make the business bigger than myself and to bring in the right people. So I'm slowly letting go of my death grip of control and starting to bring in more key people.
That's fascinating. And so go
ahead,
Lance. That's
also one of the interesting things about Launch Alaska. We have these five teams, and they're very different. They have different strengths and different needs. Heather needs a team.
Yeah.
You cannot put the world on your shoulder and keep swimming, you know? Right. Yeah. Okay, so
And the investors want to see that she's building a team that's going to grow the business, that she can't scale the whole thing by herself. So the investors are really going to be pushing this. She was going to hear this anyway sooner or later. Uh-huh. She's just hearing it from a lot of us now.
So what's it like to hear that? I mean, do you have white knuckles and you're like, okay, you can pry my fingers up? How does it feel?
Yeah, that's exactly it. Is people like Lance have been so great in reminding me you can't pack every single box of food. You can't make every single packaroon. You can't interact with every single customer every single day. And it's tough because in all reality, that's what I want to be doing is focusing on interacting with our customers, hearing about their trips, developing new recipes. But that leaves a whole heck of a lot of the business that's not getting taken care of. So there needs to be a really great group of people involved. And it's been really fun to now keep my eyes open to see who are the folks that are going to want to hop on board and help me make this kind of a global business.
I mean, that means more expense, like payroll, right? Or maybe not.
In order to grow, right, every business needs to make those kind of critical investments that are going to help them grow.
Right.
And, you know, one of the key messages I tell every single person I meet, anybody who's trying to start a business, is the most important thing you're ever going to invest your time in is growing your team. And so once you've decided to start a business, the most important thing you can be doing all the time, 24 hours a day, is like looking around and evaluating people and figuring out how they can help you and figure out how to make them a part of your team.
Interesting.
It's recruitment.
So would you say it's rather common to see, you know, someone with an idea really focused but not thinking about the team at all, but just thinking about the product and the customers and cultivating, but not thinking, how can I keep this up, you know, 50 miles an hour for 10 years? You know, is it typical of a beginner? And I don't mean that in a negative way at all, but a new business with a great idea.
Yeah, I wouldn't necessarily say a beginner, but the issue of, especially in the technology world, where you're trying to, we're trying to find people who are looking to build scalable businesses, which involve typically some technical aspect. And people who have a technical background, engineers, tend to get very product focused, very focused on what they're building and how it works. And that's not their business. That's the product. But that's if they're only doing that, they're not really growing their business.
Right.
So really getting them to understand the difference between what their business is and what their product is kind of like one of the very first things that we work on.
Okay. Well, Carl, we didn't even get you in yet. We're going to take a little break. We'll be right back. We're talking to Lance Ahern, Heather Kelly, Carl France. These are all folks involved with Launch Alaska, which is an accelerator, a business accelerator aimed at diversifying our economy, which Lord knows we need. So I'll be right back. You're listening to Hometown Alaska. I'm Kathleen McCoy.
You're listening to Hometown Alaska from Alaska Public Media. The program repeats tonight at 8 p.m. on KSKA Anchorage and will not be taking phone calls. You can find Hometown Alaska on iTunes or listen at alaskapublic.org.
Welcome back to Hometown Alaska. I'm your host, Kathleen McCoy, and today we are looking into the future. We're looking at some of the maybe new businesses that will help Alaska in its post-oil economy. We're talking with Lance Ahern, Managing Director of Launch Alaska, a business accelerator, which is a new term for me, so I'm happy to learn about it. Heather Kelly, you're making me hungry all the time, Heather, when we talk about the recipes, and I want to be out on a river having dinner, you know, having dark chocolate chili. Heather is the founder of Heather's Choice, which is a food for adventurers. And Carl France is also, and we're going to talk with Carl a little bit more now, CEO of Akilo, which is it is drones, basically, unmanned aircraft. Carl, tell me a little bit about you. Who are you? How did this become the thing that you are doing? How old are you, by the way? Because both of you are very young. So
yeah, I just turned 30, and I got my start with unmanned aircraft at the University of Alaska Fairbanks at their drone program, ACAWASI. Acronym is for Alaska Center for Unmanned Aircraft Systems Integration. So like many of the people in the state that are involved in the burgeoning unmanned aircraft industry, I got my start there at the FAA test site at UAF.
What were you doing? Were you building them or were you testing them or what were you doing?
It was fantastic. I got to do all of that. Mm. Especially back when I was in school there, the program was a little bit smaller and there was much more leeway, especially in the legal environment, to have me as an engineering student be the one designing payloads, designing portions of aircraft, and then going out and test flying them, being the actual test pilot. Together with their crew, putting together actual certification for the aircraft, and then going out and flying on missions for that.
Hmm.
So
wow.
that was an amazing opportunity.
You're also a manned aircraft pilot, right?
That's right. Yeah, I have a private pilot's license that I got here at UAA, at UAA's piloting program.
And then you're also a mechanical engineer.
That's right.
So now, are you, like Heather, the lone warrior for your company, or what's your situation like?
Not at all. I'm extremely impressed that Heather has been able to do as much as she has.
Wait till she gets a little help, boy. No telling where this is going to go. But
so
how about
you? The team right now is two co-founders, myself and then Sam Vanderwall, who is holding the fort back in Fairbanks right now.
Okay. And do you all have areas that you're responsible for?
Have
you sort of spread out the duties?
We're thankfully pretty solid on both the engineering side, and he's got more business experience than me.
Mm-hmm.
But so we're able to pretty much just shift back and forth, mm-hmm. which is really, really nice.
Mm-hmm. One of the things I learned from looking at your pitch was that the consumer drone market has taken off.
That's right.
But what is just about to take off maybe is the industrial drone market. And I'd love to hear you talk a little bit about how you see that.
Yeah, I think the thing that people are most familiar with drones, like you said right now, is this aerial videography, cinematography, and photography area where even just amateurs can go out, buy a drone, and get amazing imagery.
That we haven't seen before,
yeah,
really.
From angles that we've mm-hmm. just never seen. And that's fantastic, and I'm not very good at that.
mm-hmm.
We're engineers, so where mm-hmm. we come in is this kind of nascent applications of industrial scientific applications, like, say, agent infrastructure, going out and doing inspections so that we can keep inspectors out of harm's way. They don't have to climb the sides of bridges, things
mm-hmm.
of that nature.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Wildlife and environmental monitoring in areas that are hard to access. And these, and especially surveying for city planning or construction.
Mm-hmm.
These types of applications where you can get maybe a little bit better data quality than traditional methods,
mm-hmm.
and especially when you can do it much safer. So these are the kind of applications where we come in and where we focus.
Mm-hmm. And do you think you're in the right place at the right time in that drones have just sort of developed and companies are just thinking how they might use them? Do you do a lot of going out to companies and saying, or agencies and saying, this is what a drone could do for you, you know?
Yeah, we do a lot of demos and a lot of pilot projects just to show people what the capabilities are, because there's always two restrictions for kind of a new technology or new industry. One is the actual technology, getting it to work right and integrating it with established workflows and organizations.
Mm-hmm.
And then this other one is the regulatory side. What are you allowed to do? When are you allowed to do it? And how can you keep it safe? So in the drone space, I really think that the technology has led the regulatory space.
Say that again now.
The technology is farther along than the regulatory environment. So especially on this industrial side, the hobbyists have been able to fly for some time now.
Mm-hmm.
But only since, I believe it was May of last summer, was commercial drone operations even legal as far as the FAA was concerned.
So that's really interesting. I guess I'd love to hear you talk about either customers that you already have in this industrial mm-hmm. space or the ones that you would like to have.
Well, so I'll start with an example. One of our first projects we did was with the interior region of Alaska Fish and Game, where we went with one of their field teams out on the Delta River to do salmon surveys.
Mm.
So the Fish and Game is tasked with doing population counts of almost every salmon-bearing stream in Alaska, which is a huge job. And the way they do this is send out either manned aircraft or foot teams to go make population estimates so that they can go then figure out exactly how many allotment for commercial fisheries and for sports fishing and
manage subsistence. The fishery.
Yeah, manage the fishery, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to go out and collect data. What's difficult is when you have to do the foot counts. So we went out with one of their foot teams, took drone video of the river, and then we were able to do aerial counts that way. So we did, it was myself and Sam, so two people, and we did the entire river in the time it took six of their people to do the foot count. And at the end of it, what they had with their foot team, which is the way they've been doing it, was a number written on a clipboard. What we had after our count was the source video that you could look at later years and compare. Maybe you'd like to look at something different 5 years from now that you weren't looking for that day.
Mm-hmm.
So you can go back. So there's added value. You can go back, look at the fish count that you were intending to get, plus maybe things in the future that you hadn't even thought about.
Hmm. I heard some talk of a scientist working on something, and it was a drone that was heat sensitive, and they were talking about sending it along for erosion and melting, and so it could tell whether there was water content in the shoreline or not, sort of predicting, you know, the erosion. I don't know where it is now, but that's another example of how drones might be used in science. I think about tourism, but again, the industry of tourism trying to show Alaska, but I don't know whether that fits into your industrial, you know, view of things.
Yeah, we leave the aerial videography to the artistic people.
Yeah.
It would be just as hard for us to go and try and do artistic pursuits as it would be for artistic people to come and try and do engineering pursuits.
Right, right. Even though tourism is an industry, you would leave that, the beauty of Alaska to be
right,
captured by
exactly.
someone else. What about like whale migration and ice movement and things like that?
Yeah. University of Alaska Fairbanks with their drone program has done, I believe, both of those projects.
Mm-hmm.
They were involved on some level with a project taking a drone out to pregnant whales or whales that they thought might be pregnant and take the drone and collect some of the spray from the blowhole as the drone or as the whale comes up. And mm-hmm. they were able to take some of that sample back and analyze it and tell if the whale was pregnant or not.
Interesting.
So it's a new type of access.
Yeah,
that's never existed before.
Right, and you did say that it was only last summer, I think, that the FAA sort of embarked on regulating industrial uses. What does that landscape look like?
So it's very fluid. So the first time commercial drone flight, the flight for hire, was ever legal was last summer. So we're under this currently. It's an exemption process where each company has to go through a series of checks with the FAA to get approved to fly. Come next month is when it's scheduled to be released. We'll have the final drone rules. So Federal Aviation Regulation Part 107, just like manned aircraft, Federal Aviation Regulations, is going to open up to where you companies and individuals for hire don't have to apply for special approval. So there will be laws, regulations that are out and apply to everyone, which is really going to help this industry because these approvals tend to take, it's taking about 6 months right now. So a company has to apply, and then you wait and you wait and you wait, and eventually hear back from the FAA with an approval. Mm-hmm. And that's really cumbersome and a high barrier to entry. Mm. So that should all be gone within about a month, which is going to be fantastic.
Wow, it's moving fast. I know we asked you earlier why you were attracted to Launch Alaska. What did you want to get? And you said the mentorship was really important. But, you know, what problems are you trying to solve that you hope at the end of this 90 days you will have solved?
Well, the other side of that fish and game story is that although our pilot project was with one of the foot teams, another large set of what they do is aviation related, where they send pilots out to make counts. And that's dangerous work. That's one of the, if I remember my statistics right, one of the leading causes of death of wildlife biologists is plane crashes. Hmm. So if we can take some of the burden of that and apply that risk to a flying robot instead of people, then that's a fantastic use case.
And so that's something you're maybe going to hone in on.
Exactly.
Oh, that's great. Lance, I want to go back to you. You had some interesting things to say about where Heather was right now. What thoughts come to mind when you think about where Carl and Akilo is?
They're in a space that's really interesting. Nationally, there's a lot of investment. Those companies are attracting money at pretty good valuations, even though it's pretty speculative. I think, you know, one of the things we really want to work with him on has to do with what we call the scalable business model. Right now, they're kind of limited in the sense of, if you think of like consultants or professional services providers, they can only do the jobs that they're working on right now. So how do you kind of get them to a point where it becomes a little bit more nonlinear, where they can do much more work with the same amount of people? And so I think that's what everybody in their space is looking at, how to kind of figure out how to solve that problem.
So scale up, is that right? With the same amount of people, not adding a bunch.
Well, I would call it nonlinear scaling.
Nonlinear scaling.
Right.
Okay. I didn't know whether either Heather or Carl wanted to ask Lance something on the radio about, I don't know. I know.
Putting
Lance on the spot. I don't know. Anything you've just dying to ask Lance or, about what's coming up or no?
Lance has made himself so available that there's nothing I'm dying to ask him.
How about you, Heather?
No, I'm just super excited for the program to get started and get to spend the summer with all these folks learning as much as I can.
I know, it's like a boot camp. But I do want to touch on the other three companies because they're all really interesting. So, Lance, I'm going to come back to you and talk to you. Let's talk about, I have them here somewhere.
Sure.
I did want to ask you, Carl, what is Akilo? How did you get to Akilo? What is that name?
Akilo is...
I'm sorry, Akilo.
Akilo is the Norse god of the north wind.
Oh, I like that.
Yeah. Okay. A beautiful bird is there.
Yeah,
we've got a raven
Akilo,
on our logo.
Akilo.
Akilo or Akilo.
Either one is okay.
I'm not particular.
Okay. So let's go to, who do we have? We have...
We have three companies.
Yes, we do. So let's talk about them because I think they're fun. We started with the personal safety jewelry, which, you know, I think of black leather with spikes, but no, that's not at all.
That's your kind of thing.
No, it isn't. It just seemed like you could throw it and hurt somebody if you had to. But so what are they really talking about? And what's the name of the company?
That name is Quima. And Quima is a company that's coming up from Chile, the founder. Chile years ago created a national program called, I think, Startup Chile. And so through the years, a number of those people have gotten together and created newer businesses, and so kind of out of their alumni association. And so this was a group of people. It's a really strong team. Three of them are coming up here. And they've got a couple of additional developers who will be, you know, out of state. Their idea is that basically... there's a need in the market for personal safety devices, and there are a few that are out there, but they're kind of very kind of gadgety. And so they're kind of looking at, can they embed something like a panic button into jewelry that people actually want to wear? They have a target market of professional women, basically, but we can see how that is likely to grow in the future. And basically... It's just a really interesting idea. They're really one of the few people doing anything like this. It was kind of cool that they got into the program. They spent some time working with their mentor. Their original idea was larger. It was going to be jewelry that had some personal safety features and also had kind of Fitbit-type capabilities.
Oh, fitness. Huh.
Yeah. And so as they worked with their mentor, and that particular one is actually based out of Virginia, they were encouraged to talk to their customers. And this is a huge part of the program, actually getting people out in the field to talk to and work with their customers. And we've already had a lot of feedback from people who participated in the pre-accelerator about how valuable that was. But they went out and they talked to about 100 people, and 75% of them said, we just want the personal safety features. We already got Fitbits. We don't need all that stuff.
Uh-huh.
And so hearing that feedback really got them to change their model of what they were going to do.
You know, do you know what Quima, why they are called Quima? You don't know that yet?
I honestly don't.
Okay. It does raise the question of a company from Chile, you know, being accelerated here in Anchorage. And before the show, you and I had a really good conversation about this. So let's talk a little bit about that. It's called Launch Alaska. So you think, oh, we're going to just launch Alaska companies. But how do you look at that?
Well, it's called Launch Alaska. And, you know, when we created this, the board got together and decided we were going to focus on energy and Arctic technology companies. Arctic technology gives you a certain amount of latitude because nobody really knows what that is. It's pretty vague.
You can define it any way you want. Right.
We didn't have very much in the way of applicants who were strong in terms of energy startup. We had a lot of people who had Arctic technology aspects to their business or could be interpreted that way. And when you look at the particular problem that they have, and again, in South America and Central America, they have the same kind of problems that we have here in Alaska in terms of, you know, dangerous situations for women.
Mm-hmm.
And so you can look at how their solution is going to be very applicable to the needs that we have up here.
Mm-hmm.
And I think also very interesting to potential investors up here, mm-hmm. in the business community.
And the requirement for them is to be in residence for 3 months. But another thing you said the other day when we talked was there's the potential that they might start some manufacturing here, or they might employ Alaskans. They may decide, because the market is so good here, you know, that's part of what's going on here is even getting them to take a look at Alaska.
Yeah, they're already engaging local people who are going to work with them on helping to build their prototype devices.
Mm-hmm.
So our goal is to, again, get them embedded into the community. So we're going to help them create relationships with their mentors, with mm-hmm. the investor community. And we think that if there's a lot of value that we're providing to them, our community, there's a lot of reasons for them to be here and to stay here and grow here.
So it's exposure, northern exposure. So they have not yet arrived, but they're coming from Chile.
Right.
Do we have another one that's from out of state? I think there was.
We do.
What's the other one?
There's a team from Pittsburgh. They're called Roberzoid.
I love the name. Roberzoid.
Roberzoid, yeah.
Yes.
It is a team of five or six guys who are Carnegie Mellon engineering students, or ex-students. They're graduates.
Graduates.
And they are building a new voice control platform for the internet. So if you think of Alexa or Siri or Cortana, and Google also now has a new service out there, just announced last week. So they're really building something that is potential future large-scale critical infrastructure for the internet.
And I think the thing that separates them from Siri or separates them from the other competitors is that it's a device that you can buy, and then you can start talking to your TV? I mean, this is a very rudimentary explanation, but what is it that they actually are?
Well, today there are two aspects of their business. They're building that underlying platform that runs all this, and they're also building specific devices that will talk to the platform.
Okay, because I did see an image of something that looks like a mic. One of the things they were saying is they differentiated themselves by saying they can work in a noisy environment where the existing opportunities have to be in a quiet environment. They could be far away from the microphone, whereas existing... Well, anyway, this is some of the stuff I picked
up. The thing to remember about technology is all of this stuff is always changing.
Uh-huh.
So the target that they're looking at right now in terms of what Apple or Amazon or Microsoft is capable of right now is irrelevant 6 months from now or a year from now when they're going to be coming out with their stuff. So the goal is always to look down the road at where they need to be, not shoot at the target that's in front of them now, but the one that's going to be there.
Yeah, hard to know.
Well, you know, when you have people like this who are embedded in that community and who follow the research and understand where the world is going, mm-hmm. and what the capabilities are going to be,
mm-hmm.
Again, our goal is to pick the right teams,
right,
you know, that are capable of executing. This is a team that's very likely going to have a relatively early exit in terms of being acquired by another larger company.
Oh, wow.
Just because their engineers have such strong skill sets that that there are plenty of companies out there looking for teams like this with that capability right now.
Wow. So that's interesting. That's sort of a life cycle that I hadn't thought about, that it could be that fast.
Yeah. Some companies will simply be acquired. I mean, most companies are. Most don't IPO, right?
Yeah,
that's
right.
Not normal, right. Actually.
So that's interesting. So they're young guys. They're similar to Heather and Carl here, very young. I mean, it conjures up those images of, you know, the Silicon Valley multimillionaires at age 27 or something like that. Who knows? But they're very enthusiastic, and it was fun watching their
video. They're a lot of fun, and they're going to add a lot of energy.
And I believe many of them were, at least the one who did the video was Russian, I think. I mean, or maybe Eastern European. I don't know.
Ukrainian,
okay.
And that's one of the great things. It's like when we talk about the team coming from Chile or this other team of basically foreign-born students. I mean, there are elements of that community here already.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm going to be working to plug those folks into the communities we have here. We have such a diverse community. It's going to be very easy to kind of, you know, get them talking to other Russians and Ukrainians.
Right. The fifth business, and I should throw out our numbers one more time, and then we'll talk about the fifth business, which to me, the thing they were talking about is very Alaskan, maybe even very Fairbanks oriented. But our number is 550-8433 in Anchorage, or 1-888-353-5752 statewide, or you can also email us at hometown@alaskapublic.org. So let's talk about that fifth company, which is really fun. It has to do with fuel tanks that are empty.
It's actually another Fairbanks team. Uh-huh. They're called Iden Engineering. And what they did was they came to us with a prototype of a product that they developed, which was specifically to you would kind of attach this device to a water tank.
Mm-hmm.
And then they had this kind of full end-to-end service that they put together where once that tank started to get empty, a message would automatically go to a dispatcher in a company who would basically send somebody to refill the tank for you automatically. So nobody had to go physically check on it anymore. And they were another case where they worked with somebody who, their mentor, who basically said, that's great and that's an interesting need that you have, but there's a much bigger issue, which is fuel tanks. And so now they've gone and really refocused that particular device on the fuel tank market.
Mm-hmm.
But when you look at the big picture, right, that's their first device. They're part of what we call the Internet of Things. And that concept of kind of everything being online in the end, kind of this microphone I'm talking to being online and, you know, kind of everything.
Mm-hmm.
And all of those online devices being able to send messages to each other or to service providers. And so, you know, that's a really exciting to investors, interesting from a Silicon Valley perspective, area in which there's a lot of investment right now. And it's going to be very high growth for the next few years.
And who are these folks? It's Iden Enterprises. Who are they?
Steve Kibler and Adam Levi.
Okay. And so they'll be coming down here. And I want to talk about going to school next week and what people can – will your cohort be together and all be getting the same sort of lessons, or will they – what's it going to look like?
So, you know, in an ideal situation, we'd be able to bring everybody to work together intensely for 3 months and then they'd go. But we live in the real world. These people are actually operating real companies. Mm. They have customers they have to take care of. And so we have to kind of factor all that in. So our goal is to kind of create a program where the other thing to remember is, again, you know, somebody like Heather may not need a whole lot of product development work, but may need a lot of social media kind of work, and another company may be the exact opposite.
Right.
So you have to have a program that's flexible enough that it can, you know, give people with different needs more time in different parts of the program.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But the key thing is each team is going to have a team of mentors that are working with them. So right now we're in the process of kind of hooking up that group of 40 mentors that we have and getting them kind of assigned almost to different teams.
Now, I noticed that not all the 40 mentors are local. Many of them are, but some of them are in the Pacific Northwest. How does that work?
Some are East Coast. Some are in Europe. They're all over.
Okay.
And really, that becomes just an issue for the teams themselves to coordinate a time to make all that work.
Right. So I think you only announced your five winners about a week ago, right? You're only about 9 months old, the accelerator itself.
Right.
Now you're poised to start your first cohort. I'd just love to hear you talk about what it feels like to be, you know, you had this, you and your team has had this dream. Now here you are on the brink of starting your first cohort. What does that feel like? What are you excited about? What are you worried about?
Well, I'm part of a team. And so, you know, I've got my board of directors, and they've been at this longer than I have. And I think, you know, we all have some different ideas about how we'd like to see this go, but I think there's a core set of goals that we all share. And the basic success metric that we have out of this whole thing is that we put the teams through the program. And when they come out, we've got them in a good relationships with potential investors so that they're able to go out and get follow-on funding fairly quickly at a good valuation, and everybody's happy. So our goal is to not just, you know, for this program to be able to continue next year and the year after, but, you know, if we do all the other things in terms of giving the mentors interesting companies to work with, founders to work with, giving the investors good investment opportunities, and actually helping these teams to become stronger, whether it's product or team or the market that they're in, as long as we do that piece, I mean, you know.
You call it success.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Let's talk about the 6%,
because
I was thinking about that company that's going to flip very fast. I was like, wow, you guys are going to get your 6% right away. Or I don't know how that works, actually. Are you a long-term owner? I really don't know. What does the 6% mean?
We're investing in early stage companies.
Yeah.
And again, some of them, you know, out of the five, three of them may be gone, you know, in 3 years. The reality is that so the way it's actually structured is what we call a convertible note. So they're going to be basically getting a loan, which has an interest rate attached to it, which we'll never expect to get paid back on. They
but
never
that's
have to
not
worry
the $25,000 that they got for getting into the accelerator. Or it is.
That is the $25,000.
Okay.
And the expectation is that at some point, some event happens, there's follow-on investor or something else happens where we then decide we're going to convert that $25,000 note into 6% equity in their company.
Okay.
That's how technically it happens.
So some companies may disappear and so does your 6%, perhaps.
That is early stage finance, not just in Anchorage, but in
everywhere.
Silicon Valley and everywhere else.
Right,
yeah.
Right.
You make a lot of investments because the one Facebook pays for all the others.
Right. Wow. So we talked about how you're feeling. Does your board get involved? Have you met the board members? And I'm looking at Heather and Carl. You've met them and you socialize with them? Or
well, they're very involved in a couple ways. You have to remember that, again, we're a small community, right? Mm-hmm. And everybody wears different hats.
Like Heather was saying, I mean, the cheerleaders that you feel that are out there for you.
So
we're out of time.
Okay.
All right. Wow, it was fun.
I had so much.
It's exciting to see these new things getting started. I almost like want to check back, you know, and at the end of the summer or something.
Thank you.
We'll see. So anyway, I want to thank Lance Ahern, Managing Director for the accelerator called Launch Alaska. I want to thank Heather Kelly, founder of Heather's Choice, a company that makes food for adventurers, and Carl France, CEO for an industrial drone company called Aquilo. Next week, Charles Warforth will be back as your host. He'll be talking about a major study on alternative energy opportunities just released by the municipality. Pat Yak is Vice President of Public Media. Dave Waldron is our web editor and audio engineer. Thanks for joining us today on Hometown Alaska. I'm your host, Kathleen McCoy.
Hometown Alaska is a production of Alaska Public Media, which is solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are those of the host and participants and do not reflect the underwriters or KSKA. Hometown Alaska's theme song, Lead Dog, is by Kevin Barnett from Eagle River. Learn more about Hometown Alaska and listen online at alaskapublic.org. Life Informed. This is Alaska Public Media.